Everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. You're here with me, LaVon. Happy to be here with you guys. We have a show, if you didn't know, Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Same station, UCY.TV. We're so happy to be here on this network. It's full of other awesome people telling you awesome things that you should know, or would like to know, or would hope to know. So check out those other programs, you guys. We're going to be reading lots of news tonight from theantimedia.org. There's a lot going on in the world. Life is quite exciting at this time. You guys, I'm sure, watched the debate last night. You were so excited. I'm not going to lie, I didn't watch it. I don't even care to see those clown shoes talking about how their shoes are cooler than every other guy's shoes up there. It's a waste of our energy. We've got to put our energy where it matters, right? And playing the corporate game. Oh, I mean the political game. What's the difference? Playing their game is just not worth my energy anymore. And this week we don't have Leslie Goldman in the studio. He's been here in the Love Lab with me the past 3 weeks, talking about food freedom. Leslie is a pioneer in regards to laying down a foundation for the momentum that food freedom is gaining now. He's been literally active towards sustainability and growing organic food for at least 40 years. And he is super excited to be traveling up to Santa Rosa for the National Heirloom Expo. At the same time. So I managed, however, to get Leslie to call into the show, which he will be doing in a little while. Him and somebody very important, whose name I can't remember right in this particular moment, is going to be joining us live on the air. This guy is a world traveler, and he is a teacher at the National Heirloom Expo in regards to rare nutritious foods that apparently we have no idea about. And it really got me thinking. I think a lot about food and, you know, how did people get in the state of disease? You know, where did we lose our harmony with nature? And it started when our parents stopped teaching us how to obtain food from the ground and how to prepare it. You know, most of us know that food comes from a grocery store, and we're used to packages and bags, not preparation, however. And I think that's really important to know how to prepare food. Like, do me a favor, if you will. Think for a moment in your mind, how many different meals do you know how to make? I hope it's at least 7, so you... And I apologize, I didn't introduce Derek. Derek's in the Love Lab tonight. He's going to read over the news with us and share with us his thoughts How are you doing, Derek?
Oh, just living the dream.
Living the
Just
dream.
living the dream.
That's a good way to say it. We'll talk about that later. Living the dream. So thanks for being here with us, Derek. I sometimes get carried away with my little rant in the beginning here.
Oh, it's all good. No, I'm not that important.
You're pretty important. So on the anti-media, we try and tell you guys what's going on in the world Monday through Thursday, and we try to balance Friday with a little action, meaning what can you do to take action in your lives to not be suppressed by the man. So we'll talk a little bit about food, we're going to talk about the news, things going on in the world, and some solutions. If my okay, I apologize, my headset won't stay in my ear. Give me just a second here. I'm just going to take this off. There we go. So there's a lot of stories on the antimedia.org right now. You guys can follow around if you'd like. Let me go back into our history. Oh my gosh, you guys. I have to go so far back into our history now. We're publishing so much content every day. I'm so proud of you guys. Really exciting. The anti-media, if you didn't hear Nick talk about it already, we recently got 1 million likes on Facebook. So 1 million people say, you guys are not so bad. That's pretty cool because that means that we're broadcasted to all their friends and so on and so on. And it's really amazing to be a part of this network, which literally began as a conversation. And I'm so grateful that people give us the opportunity to tell them what is up. Because a lot of the times, the corporations who are telling you things, I'm sorry, a lot of times that the stations that are telling you things have motivations.
Because they're
And
owned by corporations.
they're owned by corporations. So you'll often hear me call politicians and corporations I mix them up, okay?
They are one and the same.
I confuse them. I don't know why.
They're so much like the same goddamn
They're
person.
so much alike. I can't figure it out.
You
So,
say no to one of them. You want ice cream cone? Both of them say yes.
yes, exactly. A lot of people today are talking about the debate, and I went over to a relative's house today, and they don't get too involved in politics. And my relative says, you know, Donald Trump had a lot of good points, and he's really funny. He's really charismatic, and I like some of the things he had to say. And I'm thinking to myself, oh shit, this is it, man. This is it. And my response, I didn't get into specifics. I didn't say, you know what, blah, 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 blah. I said, I got an assignment for you. I need you to watch something called Idiocracy and tell me whether or not you think it's a documentary or a comedy. Go.
Love that movie.
Have you seen Idiocracy since you love it?
I've seen it
And
just a few times.
what do you think about it?
It is becoming very factual. It
It
is
is.
becoming almost sad to say that yes, this is almost a documentary.
Ooh, we're getting a call already.
Oh, call?
How exciting.
Woo-hoo.
Hey, welcome to the show. You're on with LaVon. What's your name?
Hi, this is Leslie. Are you Shannon Gardner? So
Leslie,
I'm at
yes, you.
the, hi, sweetie. We're at the Rare Fruit statewide meeting in San Diego, and I've got two of the most incredible explorers of food that are going to get on the call. Joseph Simcox is called the Botanical Explorer, and he's traveling all around the world finding food that no one knows about. And it just blew my mind. And the other one is Stephen Murray, who I met a couple years ago at the California Soul Food Conference. How are you doing, Levon?
Really well, Leslie. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you perfect. Can you
Awesome.
hear me?
I can hear you just fine. I'm so excited that
Okay,
you
let's
guys are
get
calling
Joseph.
in.
Joseph, come on over here. So this is Joseph. No, you go first. This is Joseph Simcox, and Joseph, tell what you said about how there's 12 foods that mainly people are focusing on, and you discovered that there's thousands of foods that people could eat. Okay, here.
Yes, hello, Levon. How are you?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to speak with you, Joseph. Thank you for calling. I'm well.
Where are you, sweetie? Where are you, sweetie, right now?
I am in the Love Lab which is my office slash home in Lemon Grove.
Okay, wonderful. So you're apparently running a blog or a...
I'm a component of a machine called the Anti-Media. We are literally a grassroots organization, and we share the news to the world. We were established locally in San Diego, and we're very excited to talk to people. And we give them good news, which is why we're talking to you.
Okay, so what should we talk about? Leslie is prompting me, and he says he's particularly fascinated with a element of the food security issue, which I brought up in my talk here this evening, and that is that the bulk of humanity depends upon only 12 species of plants for 85 to 90% of their carbohydrate needs. That means the staple foods of the world, what the vast population depends on, come from only 12 species of plants. So in telling you that, it sounds like we're putting an awful heavy load on a very small number of species.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that is dangerous, should there ever be diseases or pests or calamities that would affect these particular plants in a particular way, it's inappropriately relied on to such an extent that we're really gravely endangering our future. So what I contend is the greatest possibility for food security comes in spreading the burden out on a greater number of plant species. So the more kinds of plants that you're producing food with, the greater chance you have of escaping big diseases or big blights or calamity.
Right.
That's
does
a very,
that make sense to
oh,
you?
It does. It's like instead of having one person carry the groceries, you share the load and the bags don't break.
Okay, so that's a wonderful point. So in supporting this, it's not efficient to just say, oh, there's lots of plants. The reason I have a certain validity in claiming what I say is because I'm a food plant ecologist.
Mm-hmm.
As Leslie introduced me, I call myself colloquially the botanical explorer. But the point is, unlike many people who study horticulture or agriculture, I am not a specialist. I'm not an expert at oranges. I'm not an expert at strawberries. I am a generalist.
Mm-hmm.
And in the camp of food, I have touted that as important because very few people on the planet know the great diversity of plants that can be eaten. And so all over the world, right now I still haven't reached even half the countries of the world. I've been to about 102 countries. I have studied the foods that people's past have used and eaten. So not only domesticated plants that have been foraged and plants that have been tended. And when I say tended plants, I always have to clarify this. Some plants were promoted just by the actions of humans in harvesting them. So if they were digging a root, as they dug up the soil, inadvertently they would spread the plant around because they would leave little bits of the root in the soil. So the next season they would sprout up and hence be tended. So there's this tendency to not understand what people's past ate. And it's not because we are connected to nature. The reason being is that we're not connected to nature. In the past, people knew where their food came from. Now we go to grocery stores and markets to buy our food. So it's a very clear point. I mean, in fact, in certain polls relating to food intelligence or food knowledge, we come up with things like 20 to 50% of kids don't know where milk comes from because they never identified a cow as the source of milk. And when they go to the grocery store aisle, they see a plethora of milks like soy milk and coconut milk and almond milk and rice milk. And for all intents and purposes, they've obliterated the knowledge of where milk comes from a cow.
Right. And
so we have a lot of ignorance.
Yeah, I agree. And what you do is so important, you know, exploring the world for edible health, you know, is people, it really dumbfounds me how we've lost the innate connection to our food. It literally becomes us.
What this does, this lack of connection, it puts us at the whim fancy of people who tell us where it should be. And one of those camps that's telling us how it should be is the agro-industrial complex, which just by its very nature hopes and depends on people being detached from food sources so that they become more dependent on them and hence increase the profitability and the predictability of market trends. So the agri-industry does not want people to know where food comes from. In fact, flourishes when people don't know where food comes from, and it's able to set its agenda more effectively and promote things like genetically modified organisms as a solution to world hunger, because in that process of explaining where food is going, they can claim, well, desertification, they can claim that climate change, global warming is going to affect our crops, and hence we need to adapt our crops to be more resilient to these impending conditions. But in their myopia, they've left out the great majority of the world's food-producing plants. If you recall, I said that 10 or 12 species of plants produce up to 85 or 90% of the world's carbohydrates. That's the staple food of the world. Hence, there's very little knowledge outside of that agro-industrial concept, and that means that most of the plants that are useful for the future of humanity are being ignored or at least marginalized.
And that's really important.
Does that make sense?
Oh, it does. It absolutely. And you've actually connected directly to what my opening statement was, is I wonder often is how much of the food chain are we consuming? Well, a small fraction, especially people here in America, they only know about...
Let me put numbers on it. I told the crowd here tonight that there were approximately 300,000 species of plants. There's discrepancies in terms of how people classify plants, but let's use the smaller number, and that's 300,000 species. Of those, legitimately, approximately 10% are useful for food plant resources. This means that we are throwing approximately 30,000 species of plants out of the basket that we could rely on for food production.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to take these wild species and domesticate them or improve them for food production purposes, they grow in so many diverse climates that we have everything covered from cold mountaintops to hot basins of deserts, which is amazing.
And what's your solution? Like, what do you teach people in your talks? You know, you give them information about food.
The solution is simple. The solution is to focus, not focus, because that's exactly what I'm not doing, excuse me. The solution is to pay more attention to the diversity of food-producing crops and for passionate hobbyists and passionate people who are inspired to take up the yolk and start growing these plants, start breeding these plants, and even selecting them as if they were modern-day Luther Burbank, improving plants and creating new ones for the future.
So we've got to kind of live in harmony with nature. What a concept.
Absolutely.
What a concept.
What a concept. And what I contend is that the future of humanity depends upon creating synergies with nature, whether it's in our infrastructures of cities and highways and byways, or
yes,
of how we do agriculture. We have to become more astute in our symbiotic relationship with nature, because we can't fight nature as we now do. We act as if we're in a constant war against nature rather than trying to develop a harmony with it that allows both man and beast and flower to coexist.
Yes. And you bring up such a good point, is we have lost our harmony. And Leslie refers to it as we've lost our beat with nature. And he's right. You know, we're off beat and we're off track. And I've been working in the natural healing industry for 6 years. And I've realized people recover completely from diseases by simply connecting with plants. And what my herb teacher would call plant teachers, you know, every plant,
absolutely,
yeah, every plant has an intention, just like every part of your body has a purpose. And what you teach people is very important. And how do people often go ahead?
No, excuse me, I'm listening to you. I'm just interrupting because there's a slight gap.
Oh, I apologize if there's a delay. I see some pictures here on the rareseeds.com on the page featuring you of you gardening since a child. Who gave you the passion for food, Joe? Where did that come from?
Well, I think that it came from the fact that my mother was a biology teacher, and she introduced me to so many things in biology, and my father, and they were both nature lovers, but it was the introduction of them. I think my dad bought me some squash one time, and I was completely impassioned by the fact that you could plant a seed and create, if you will, a pumpkin. And it was an amazing marvel for a child, and I just completely was sucked into it, and I've been so ever since.
That's beautiful. Just you witness the power of planting a seed. And I have a similar experience, you know, watching my grandparents grow food and watching them.
How old are you? It's Leona?
My name's LaVon, and my body's 28, almost.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, mine's 51, but I'm pretty vigorous.
What are you saying? It's probably because of those awesome plants you eat. You're made of good
stuff. Yeah, I eat a lot of variety of plants, and I eat lots of blueberries. I would love to meet you sometime, LaVon.
Oh, my gosh.
Sounds very, very interesting.
It would be awesome to meet you and talk about plants, Joseph, and I want to commend you for your work. And
thank you so much.
I'm hoping to see you at the National Heirloom Expo and hear you speak.
Honey, I won't be there because what I am doing is I am heading to film for 5 weeks, and I fly to the Ukraine on Wednesday. I'm going to spend about a week to 10 days in the Ukraine, then I go to Moldova, then Romania, then Armenia, and then Georgia, and I will be filming 5 episodes of botanical exploration and cultural exploration in those 5 countries. So I will not be at the expo this year.
Oh, well, you'll be doing some amazing work, though. And please, Joseph, do you have...
Let me give you my website. It's called explorewithjoseph.com.
Okay.
Explorewithjoseph, JOSEPH.com.
Okay.
And then my email, my personal email is Simcox2. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Simcox, as my last name, the number 2, at MAC, like MacComputers.com. Simcox2@Mac.com. So.
Okay.
It would be a pleasure to hear from you, and I would love to hear more about your work because it sounds fantastic. Leslie is hyping you up and saying you reached 30 million people.
We talk to a lot of people, and we're talking to them right now, Joseph. And thank you for sharing that message of being symbiotic with our Earth, because more and more of us need to share that and really, really perpetuate it to the others who inhabit this place, because that's the
keep
key.
Keep the good work up. This is wonderful, Ron. Thank you so much. Here's Leslie.
Love you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, LaVon?
Leslie, thank you for the introduction to Joseph. That's really awesome.
Yeah, that's Joseph Simcox. He's one of the top speakers at the National Heirloom Expo. I met him there. And, you know, there's over 100 speakers. There's over 114 this year, and I do hope you get up there as part of the anti-media team. So next, Stephen, come on over here. So we're on the radio, and this goes right on Skype and YouTube. And tell how we met, and I met your dad, and tell what you've been doing in Asia. How old are you now, Stephen? Okay, here, go on.
Hi there. My name is Stephen Murray. My family, we grow fruits in the Bakersfield area. We have a farm we sell in Santa Monica Farmers Market and other farmers markets.
Okay.
I'm growing. Uh-huh.
Nice to meet you. You're a farmer. Thank you for your hard work.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate you very much.
Tell us
your name one more time. Stephen.
Oh, sorry. Stephen, S-T-E-V-E-N, Murray, M-U-R-R-A-Y.
It's very nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too.
So tell us about what you do.
I just graduated with a degree in plant science and Chinese. I spent the last year and a half in China. And then afterwards, I visited a lot of my rare fruit collecting friends from across Asia, and I went up the entire west coast of India, went grafting around Turkey, through Myanmar, Malaysia, Indonesia, Borneo, Philippines, et cetera. I have a small FSC import permit so I can bring in species from across the world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm growing 350 species of about 1,500 varieties of fruit.
Oh, my gosh.
I got a scholarship from the Orange County Rare Fruit Growers, the entire organization. 2 weeks ago, I was the bank speaker for the North American Fruit Explorers in Wisconsin and La Crosse.
That's
and
amazing.
I just joined their council. Yeah.
So, what was the name of that? North America Food?
Oh, the North American Fruit Explorers.
North American Fruit Explorers.
Uh-huh.
And you joined their group? What kind of group do they have?
They're more on the East Coast, and they do stuff like elderberries, heirloom apples. And I'm really interested in, you know, all fruits, temperate, subtropical, tropical. You know, if it's edible, I'm interested in it. And I've gotten to a lot of places to find doing cool fruits.
What's your favorite fruit?
That is a really, really hard question to answer.
Good. You're doing it right then. I like you already. People says, what's your favorite food? And I go, what do you mean? All of them.
They're on the season. So,
yeah, what? Like, and then, like them all.
And then, well, like, I really like sack foods.
Oh, you cut out there. What was that called?
Sack. The province of Canada. Uh-huh. From the Amelaria genus. They're really nice berries. Closely related to hawthorns, but they taste a lot like blueberries. That's one of my favorite temperate ones. I'm a really big fan of mamey, which is Poteria sahote. I really like some of the Artocarpus species, like, you know, jackfruits, pendulai, chepedec, morong. Morong's really tasty. I'm a really big fan of the caimitos, which is our star apples. Those are just among the most delicious things in the world.
I want some of that,
actually.
People
don't even know what they are.
Yeah, I've never heard of that, but I want it. You make it sound so good.
Oh, yeah, it tastes kind of like a fig crossed with an apple, but kind of milky and creamy.
Oh, my gosh.
In Vietnam, they call it milk fruit. What they do is they rub it across like a rock or a flat surface, and then they bite on the end and they suck all the milk out of it. It's really tasty.
Mm-hmm.
Yang mei is a really good fruit in China. Chiguo or chia fruit, that's another one that I've been researching a lot recently. I'm growing about 58 species of mirtilli, so that's like guavas and Eugenia.
Oh my god,
like
those are my favorite.
Cherries.
I could eat guava tree. I have by myself. Like there has been a guava tree my friend has that has been covered in fruit, and I ate them all. I can do that.
Wow!
I can literally say I ate a guava tree. Like I love
that's
guavas.
Wonderful.
They're so good.
Yeah.
So if you can introduce me to more guavas friends, like guavas relatives. Oh. I could make a lot of jam.
Yeah, the guava family is just a really, really diverse group of fruiting species. So I'm growing, like I said, about 58 species, and I'm really experimenting with South American and Australian native guava relatives, like the bun trees and the
bun tree is very interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have a talk tomorrow as one of the speakers from 2:30 to 3:30 at the California Fruit Growers Festival of Fruit.
You're going to be at the Festival of Fruit speaking tomorrow? That's amazing. What's going to be the highlight of your talk, if you can give people a little preview? Uh-oh. It's getting a little shaky there. Steven, can you hear me? Oh, friends, it looks like we might have lost Steven. I hope he calls us back. I really want to hear more about these guava species and more of the awesome work that he's doing. He did mention that he's speaking at a festival of foods tomorrow, which is highly exciting. I don't know if it's my awareness. Could be, or it could be everyone else's awareness accompanied by my awareness. Oh, they're calling back. Hi there, it's LaVon. This is Steven.
Hi, let's try that again. Steven just wanted to give you how to stay in touch with him.
Okay, yeah, right. Please do.
If anyone wants to follow me on Facebook, I have a page called Steven Murray's Rare Fruits, and it covers a lot of the photos of just the different fruits I've seen over the last 9 months in Asia and across that part of the world.
Yeah, we'd love to follow you. We'd love to see what you're doing. How do we do that?
Just go onto Facebook and look up for pages.
On
Steven
Facebook?
Murray's on Facebook, yep.
Oh, Facebook, I'm sorry. Steven Murray. And spell your name one last time because I might have spelled it wrong.
Steven Murray, Murray,
And then Rare Fruit, R-A-R-E-F-R-U-I-T.
Okay. That's it. That's easy enough. Rare Fruit. Let's find you. Let's be friends.
Cool.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, Stephen, thank you so much for calling us. And mention again where you'll be speaking tomorrow so people can check it out if you're available.
I'm going to be speaking tomorrow at the Euclid Center, the Jacobs Center on Euclid, I think.
That's
from
close by.
2:30 to 3:30.
Okay. Well, hopefully I'll meet you tomorrow. Hopefully I can make it out there.
Okay. Well wonderful.
Thank you for your knowledge, and I'm going to give people the way to connect to you so they can follow what you're doing, okay?
Okay. This is Leslie. How are we doing, LaVon? I've got another, let's see what we're doing. Ron, come on up. This right here is and his kid. He was the mentor for Joseph Simcox, and his name is Ron Peroff. And the way he makes his living is going around San Diego collecting seed off of trees.
Oh, my gosh.
He's a master. Ron, let me see if I can get him.
Hello.
Thank you, Leslie, for being a live correspondent, finding me awesome people to interview.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
I am in San Diego, not too far from
here.
You, in the Love Lab.
Oh, yeah, so in this room. Can we talk outside? Yeah, just from that. Here.
I'll try and get another connection. We'll go outside.
Okay, Leslie, thank you so much. So Leslie is at an event right now here in San Diego that I really wanted to attend. Forgive me, I forget the name of the gathering, but there's literally hundreds of pioneer food warriors who met in a room to share their ideas. So Leslie's there playing live correspondent and finding us people to talk to and hear about, which is really cool because none of us had to go travel to this event in San Diego. Wait, it's kind of like we're there. And we've had somebody else call in. Hello, are you still on the line? Guess not. Well, the 7177 number, call us back if you'd like to talk. We'd love to hear what you have to say. And we're waiting for Leslie to connect us with somebody else. So these people are talking about pioneering food freedom, and that's really important in regards to taking back our power. We're seeing an increase in violence across the nation, especially in regards to violence from our police force, you know, the people we trust with our safety. So if you can't rely on that system, you must create your own. So if nothing makes us happier than promoting people, supporting others towards their optimal wellness. If you look on the anti-media org right now, there's a lot of articles talking about this type of occurrence. But Leslie, have you got someone else for us to talk to?
Yeah. Ron, this is one of my heroes. This is Ron Peroff. And a couple decades ago, because he had this very rare seed collection of seed all around the world. And I know him as someone in his earlier days who also traveled to many countries. And he's the mentor for Joseph Simcox. He originally tell how you, Joseph, and how you started that, and then tell about your work, Ron.
Hi there. My name's LaVon. Ron, welcome to the show. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, well, I appreciate you being here with us. Tell us about what you do and why you're a food freedom fighter.
Well, so the book has more freedom.
Would just people knowing about food and where it comes from and how to cultivate it That's part of food freedom, and we want to know how you perpetuate that.
I see. Okay.
I apologize, Ron. For some reason, I can't hear you at all. I'm not quite sure if I'm coming through on your end there, but my connection to you is not very good. So I'm going to ask that you call us back, if possible. If possibly possible.
Wow.
So that was exciting.
Yeah.
That was definitely exciting. I wasn't anticipating all those callers, and here they are.
Here it is.
Food freedom. Okay. Hi, it's LaVon still. How?
Hi. Okay, let's try that again.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Okay, hold on. Okay, hold on.
Live correspondent, okay, Leslie, okay, Goldman.
Ron? Okay, tell her you meant to tell her.
Hi there, can you hear me?
Oh.
Hey, you're on with LaVon. Again, thank you for your time. So tell us about what you do.
Hello? You're saying hi. We're on
the yep, we're live. We're live on the radio right now, actually. And we're very interested in knowing how you know Leslie and what it is that you do. Universe says no.
We're not
supposed to know what Ron does.
No.
Oh man.
That's too bad.
I really want to hear
Leslie's hero.
Right? Oh my gosh.
And now
I don't get to hear what he says.
I don't get it.
Leslie, I apologize. We for some reason can't hear anything that's coming through when we get on the phone with Ron, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's like Leslie's fine, and then as soon as it touches Ron's hand, it
goes no, boom, not there.
Ron rejects life.
We also had another caller try to give us a ring here from the 177 number. I'm not sure if you're still on the air. Are you there with us? You want to say anything?
If not, it's cool. We get it.
Okay, so I apologize. We lost the call with Leslie, I believe, because don't hear him anymore. Leslie, thank you so much for your hard work connecting us to people live at this food festival that you're attending. It was really interesting hearing from both
Joseph
and Steven. You remember their names? Good job.
Of course, I remember their names.
I wrote them down. Well, you should be doing this, apparently. I quit. No, I'm just kidding. And I'm done. I retire. Flip the table. No. So, go universe. It was really cool hearing from those guys. And, of course, they're calling us back. Here we go. Round three.
Yeah.
Here we go. Round three. Leslie, are you there?
Hi. Yeah, hey. Here. I don't know how much we're outside now. But I just talked briefly to Ron, and maybe we'll have him on another time. I don't know how much power I have. So this is Ron, and he was saying how we met. But his work is fascinating. He's made his living for many years. He traveled around the world, and in recent years, he harvests seeds off of trees in San Diego. Tell about the seeds in San Diego that actually could be harvested, and why you do that.
Hello?
Ron, it's so nice to hear you finally. I apologize for the delay. Tell us what you do.
No, we were talking in the building and there was bad reception. Go ahead.
So we want to know about your harvesting of seeds and your rare collection.
Well, I used to go on expeditions around the world I went on about 20 expeditions harvesting seed, and I used to sell by mail order. And I had about 10,000 customers, 50,000 on the mailing list, and I eventually got 6,000 species. I wanted to get 300,000, but I started in Hawaii 47 years ago. But I'm 81 and a half, and so I can't do that like I used to.
Oh, my God. So
I would go 3 expeditions a year, 6 weeks per expedition, and I would go into the rainforest. And, I wanted to get 300,000. That's the number of species. But it didn't matter if they're food plants, whatever. I was trained in food plants and pomology. That's an airplane flying over, yeah. But go ahead. We don't have a lot of time, but I'd like to gear it to more or less. I think I had the biggest collection. One of the biggest. There was somebody in Germany had a bigger collection.
Oh, Mike, what an honor to talk to you. I'm a novice
thank
seed
you
collector.
So much.
I'm on year 6 of collecting seeds. And
oh, you are?
I am just astounded to hear how many
really?
Species. Yes, like I'm geeking out right now. Do you know what that means? Like, oh. I'm highly excited. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm happy.
Well,
I
worked out the thing on seeds on storage because I used to store all my seeds and you want to when you get the seed. But I found out there's 3 kinds of seeds. You have your wet seed, your semi-wet, and your dry. And not too many people think like, but some seeds you got to keep wet, especially from a rainy area. And others you can keep dry and you can keep for hundreds of years.
Wow.
So I had to work out ways on how to keep the seed. But every plant has a seed. I was looking for bougainvillea seed, and I finally found one plant in China that had seed. But yeah, go ahead. So I'm glad to talk to somebody who's interested in collecting seeds.
I am totally into collecting seeds. Right now I have just over 100 varieties, and they're all organic, they're all non-GMO, and they've all been treated.
Yeah.
I haven't bought them. So that's
oh, really?
That's part of my method of collecting seeds is I don't want to buy them with Federal Reserve notes. I want to trade them with a human being. So it's really important to do that, and that's a beautiful way for us to connect back to our earth is to gather the seeds.
Yeah, make sure that the refrigeration is the best, and they should be put in airtight packets because the oxygen will reduce the life of the seed. So, and sometimes if you can vacuum seal, but put it in a tight container with little oxygen and then refrigerate it. That will keep the seed life much longer that way.
Well,
you can V-seal it, you know, put it in a vacuum, you know, go ahead.
That's really awesome. Thank you for sharing that with me. I honestly don't keep my seeds in the fridge.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
No.
Well, it's up to you how you keep them, but they'll keep much longer under refrigeration.
Well, it sounds
and
like
without
I need
oxygen.
To get another fridge. I need to get a fridge just for my seeds, I think.
Yeah, I had a bunch of fridges. Then I had a big warehouse. And I started in Hawaii, and then I got a walk-in reefer. But some seeds can be frozen, like some of the pine seeds. But that's a whole different thing, how you keep this. There are some seeds they found that are 2,000 to 3,000 years old, and they germinate.
Oh, my goodness.
A lot of seeds don't last very long. Yeah, go ahead.
What is your favorite plant to cultivate personally, and why?
Are you talking of an edible plant or
just in general?
I think I love to grow all the plants and collect them.
See, that's what's special about us nature people is we don't have a favorite. We like them all. No, I ask every nature enthusiast, what's your favorite? And they can't answer. And that's how I know it's
really?
True in your heart. Yes. I asked every single person on the show tonight, what's your favorite? And they can't say just one.
Let me tell you about a guy I met. He came to visit me in Hawaii. I used to be there. He's a potato farmer in Oregon. And he has the second largest seed collection in the world. And we exchanged heat. Later I went to Oregon and got a lot of his heat, so I built up my collection. But the biggest collections are in Germany. I think they call them carpological collections, and they have like 25,000. But this guy had about 20, and he just did it as a hobby, and he had seeds of all different shapes. He just collected because he wanted, you know, like people collect different things. So, but, you know, he can collect just, but that's a way of preserving germplasm. So, yeah, go ahead.
So I just want to make sure that I have your correct name, sir, that so that people can learn about what you're doing. Because you did.
Ron Hurov, but it's Herbert Ronald, and the name of my business, Herbert Hurov's Tropical Seeds or Hurov Seeds and Botanicals. But being 81 now, I'm not as active as I used to be.
Well, we're very inspired by your work, and I'm amazed at how many different species you have and how long you've been involved in such a beautiful thing. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for what you
since you're in, what's it called? Food, what's the name of your group? Food what?
The name of this group is the Anti-Media.
Anti-Media?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. Well, there is something about food. There's been a lot of push recently on to grow food within that your own area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, and I'm a gardener.
Pardon?
I'm a gardener myself.
Yeah, but some of the stores will actually say where it's grown. But then I had a professor who disagreed with that, and my thesis in school was I grew carrots and beets, the same variety from three latitudes in Canada, and the ones that grew farther north at much higher levels of vitamins and sugars and things like that.
Mm.
So what he kept stressing is that you don't want to eat just the foods from your area. You need to get it from different locations because each area may be deficient, like in a certain thing, but if you get it from a diversity of areas. So I wanted to counter that concept that just grow in your area, because there may be people from the interior they get thyroid because they don't have iodine. People on the coast have iodine. So you got to get it from a diversity of areas. But especially if the farther north you are, the more nutritious the foods. And that's one of the problems we have in San Diego. We don't have as many vitamins as, say, if it comes from north. I'm not sure, you know. Anyway,
no,
I just wanted to...
You bring up a really good point, and... the individual we spoke to before you, he suggested that we're supposed to live in harmony with the earth, and you're suggesting that we're supposed to have a variety of foods from around the earth. So collectively, you guys are suggesting that we're supposed to live in harmony with the earth and then trade in amongst each other.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So these are really revolutionary concepts.
Oh, they are?
They're wonderful concepts, and I appreciate you sharing them. And
let me tell you another concept. They eat young foods, young vegetables, yeah, because they have that juvenile, anything that's embryonic. And we've done a lot of, used to do a lot of vegetative propagation, and we can make a plant young. We can bring the juvenile back, and I think we can do, but by eating younger foods, more juveniles, and as close to the seed or the embryo as possible,
sprouts.
We get more juvenile hormones.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah, juvenile foods, you know, young carrots, but the coconut water is the most juvenile of them all because that is embryonic. But that we'll get juvenile hormones. As we age, we don't get enough juvenile foods.
True.
Okay.
Ron, tell about going around San Diego and harvesting seeds off a tree. Tell about that.
I don't know. Are you interested in that?
I'm totally interested in that.
Well, I do agapanthus.
What's that?
Oh no, did we lose him again?
No, come back to me.
It's anytime we try to talk to him about that.
The tree, what the seed has to be at the right stage. I mean, to be the seed, you know, you want it just as it's opening. You don't want to get the seed that's fallen on the ground because it's older and the insects get into it. They're just the right point. When the pot is opening up, that's the best time to harvest it. Most seeds are full of life, full of vitality, and you'll get very good germination. The other thing I want to tell you is the seed is only a seed. What's important is the embryo. And you need fertilization between plants that are close together. If you get one isolated tree, it may not have an embryo. So when we look at a seed, we'll put the seed in water and swell it up and then cut it. And if we need a handle, we'll look and we'll see if it's got an embryo. So you can have a lot of seeds without embryos.
Oh.
And then we do germination. So a seed, it could be empty. So you have to have it what we call fertile. And I won't do anything. I need about 90% fertility, you know, before I'll even ship it out. I float the seed. Those seeds, that, not all of them, but you know, put a little soap in there, and the good seed will go in the bottom. There are seeds that float, but generally speaking, you float the seed, and all the seeds that aren't good will float off, or I'll blow the seed, and the light seed will blow. So you want to get as many of the seed pollinated as possible, and a lot of seeds need a group of plants growing where they'll cross-pollinate, you know. But one, if you just get it from one plant, it may not be pollinated, and it may be an empty seed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And I clean all my seed by hand. Pardon?
That's a really interesting point, is especially people gardening urbanly now, they yeah. don't grow, they grow, you know, food in a variety of ways, and maybe they're not, their plants aren't as fertile as they can be. So, say.
Well, fertile, I mean not fertilizer. I'm talking of whether it has an embryo. We call that fertile. It has to. You don't want to plant seeds that don't have embryos.
Oh, no, I understand what you're saying, and I'm agreeing with you. It's a really good point that people don't really think about. So, I appreciate that. But can
okay.
you tell
what
us?
Do you, what do you do? Are you a gardener? What else?
I'm a writer.
Oh, you're a writer.
And I'm hosting the show that we're on right now. This is something.
That's wonderful.
And
the other thing, there are a lot of that Tim Cox. I think you talked to him.
Yes.
And I'm his mentor. I mean, I help him a lot. But there are a lot of plants that we could turn into crops. I'm a wild harvester. I don't grow, you know, I do some growing. I was trained to grow, but I basically let nature do the growing, and that's my life. I live as a wild harvester that that's kind of one of the first hunters and wild harvesters. And so I just let nature is my farm. The whole world's my farm.
That's
and,
beautiful.
So you have to learn, know how. You know, it's no fertilizer. I did a lot of work on pesticide toxicology, and you don't want to use pesticides. I've done a lot of work on that, you know. Okay,
and
anything else?
Why don't you want to use pesticides or chemicals on your food? You know, a lot of the current agricultural system is built upon the principle of said things. Why don't we need those, do you think, Ron?
Well, Rachel Carson wrote a book, and I got a job at the University of Hawaii studying the toxic effect of pesticides. There were 11 groups that were set up, and Hawaii was the second largest. California was the largest, and was in the School of Medicine. So
mm-hmm.
we recruited people, pesticide workers, farmers, and then we studied, checked their blood and everything. And we studied how these pesticides affect people. I mean, they kill insects, but they have an effect on people. So that's what I did for 6 years in the Pacific Biomedical Research Center at the University of Hawaii. Pesticides are affect people. The main way on the organophosphorus is that they reduce the cholinesterase level, and that your reaction time, your reaction time is closer. So, but almost all pesticides have some deleterious effect on people. And so if you don't use it, you won't have this problem. And so that's why I don't like using it. I got poisoned with pesticides. I even got cancer, and that could be partly due to pesticides. I used to put my hands in, we didn't know then. But they're bad for your health.
I'm sorry to hear about your body having that type of reaction to whatever gave it that ailment.
Yeah, well, actually, it was Nexotan test, but go ahead. But it was a number,
Right.
I used to screen every new pen. And then I got out of school with a pesticide company, and we were looking at new. And one of the products we had was B9, and it was B995, and that's a growth retardant. They use it to make apples red with out of Connecticut, U.S. rubber. And it turned out that caused cancer. So it was a rocket fuel, and they developed it. So the natural pesticides are probably better, but
yes,
not
I
all
agree.
Of them.
And I have two questions for you, and I've only got a few minutes, so I'm hoping to get them in. They're
Go
very
ahead.
Important. One, as a biomedical researcher and an individual who's had cancer, do you know about the effects of cannabis-infused oil for defeating cancer and helping with horrible ailments?
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of them are helpful. They're herbs, and they probably help. I'm not an expert on it.
I know that's just one that people use, but
The
important thing is that we don't need pharmaceuticals all the time, and we can live in harmony with nature without adding things like B995 fuel, fuel. That's just crazy. And it's a segue into my next question, which is, what are your thoughts on us recreating food forests as they are in nature everywhere, where there's food growing everywhere in companion plants, that are near it? Are there, and are it's with companion plants, and we mimic nature as it should be. Like, do you think that's a possibility, and would it be a good?
Well, it's not a possibility, but it's something that has to be done. It's very important. I was growing a plant I found in the Philippines. It produces gasoline, and the plants would die. And then there's a couple that lived, and they had weeds around it. And then I found out that it's an epiphyte. You don't want a weed around it. So this is harmony in nature. When we grow things, we don't realize the nature it grows amongst other plants. So we have to grow amongst other plants.
Thank you so much, Ron. Have a beautiful evening.
Yeah.
I'll meet you.
Thank you
soon.
Very much.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Bye.
I'ma let them know, through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.